Step into 2026 with a home you can call your own. With shared ownership at Latimer Homes, you can reserve your new place for just £26 before the 26th of January. Shared ownership offers a more affordable route onto the property ladder, making your dream of owning your own home a reality. Begin your next chapter today at latimerhomes.com. T's and C's apply.
We usually have a reader question, but today we have something a little different. A government official asked to call in.
Okay, we've got the government official on the line,
and you are on with the mayor of Flavortown.
This interview is going on, and I know it's probably playing pretty straight-laced, so I thought I would jump in and come at you with some hard-hitting questions I need you to quickly respond to.
Hey everyone, welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at Entrepreneur.com. And normally when we have guests on the show and they talk about losing their shirt in business, it's a bad thing. But today's guest has a whole new take on that. Bert Kreischer is a wildly successful comedian, a wildly successful entrepreneur, and well, the man's just wild. Hey Bert, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic. I just finished my workout. I'm having a protein shake.
Wow.
Yeah.
Words I didn't expect to hear come out of your mouth. That's fantastic.
I am, you know, I think I was just talking to my trainer about this because he said, you know, people ask what it's like to work out with me. And he's like, you know, it's not the thing you think it is. And I think that's always been my approach to everything is like, look like the, be the Cinderella story, be the underdog, be the one no one expects to get up at 7 o'clock, get to the gym, work out, eat right, and then party at night, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I was watching your Instagram post about your love letter to drinking alcohol, and you were talking about do all the things that keep you in shape so that you can enjoy this thing. And I tell you, it was very inspiring. It brought a tear to my eye.
I feel like that's an analogy for life is, you know, bust your ass in business so that you can take your kids on vacation, you know?
Yeah, right.
I look back at life and I think, I wanted the big house so badly. And it's not about the big house. It's about the experiences with your family and being able to do cool stuff with your kids and do cool stuff with your wife and be able to afford to send them to college and get them a nice car. Nothing fancy, but get them something that they're excited about. Those are the things that matter. I look back at of all the houses we've owned. The first one, what is it, 1,100 square feet? That was my favorite house. That smelled like family. It sounded like family.
That's awesome. There's so much happening in your life. You've got multiple podcasts. You're running a production company with your wife. You have comedy specials. You have this new show, Free Bert, coming out on Netflix. And you talk about hard work. When you were a sixth-year senior at FSU, did you imagine that one day you would be working this hard?
No. I didn't understand what work was, in all honesty. And I did this. That sounds like it comes from privilege, but I didn't understand what hard work was because I didn't understand passion yet. And all I knew is that I wasn't good at school. I didn't know how to study. I didn't understand people that could sit behind a textbook and read it or people that could sit in a class and take notes. I never understood what taking notes was. I didn't know how to study for a class. So I had zero passion about school. And when you're not passionate about something, it's really hard to apply yourself. And so I had no direction. I was kind of rudderless. And then the one thing I was good at was coming up with like ideas for parties. I know this sounds so silly, but I was the social chairman of my fraternity for four and a half years. And so I could throw one hell of a party. And when I got behind an idea that I had, like Unga Gunga Balunga or Excalibur, I could really apply myself and come up with really fun, crazy, next level ideas. And once I found comedy, I understood all those people that worked hard in school, I understood what they were doing. And so I think I had no idea that I'd ever work. I couldn't imagine how I'd work. I didn't understand anything about work at all. And I had jobs, but it's like clock in, clock out. And now it's like I'm so lucky I found what I'm passionate about because I don't ever look at anything as work. And this desk I'm sitting at is covered in work. And it's not work to me at all.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So do you remember the first time you got paid to be funny?
So that's a tricky question because you don't get paid to be funny for a while. Meaning, a lot of times you pay to do open mics. It was like $10 to get up at an open mic. And I got paid at the Boston Comedy Club, I got a door. I got a job working the door. And the caveat, the benefit, at the end of the night, if I had brought in enough people, I could get on stage. The first time I got paid for being funny was I did a showcase in L.A. when I was like probably 27, and for ICM. And I went into this meeting. I did really well in the showcase, and I went into this meeting. I remember getting done the showcase, and they scurried me out the back door so that no one could talk to me. This is back when development deals were huge in Hollywood. And the next day, I had a meeting with a woman. I wish I remembered her name. She worked at Fox. And she said to me, "You're about to get offered more money than you'd ever imagined, and I want to be the first one to give you that money." Wow. And I remember sitting on her couch. She was sitting crisscross applesauce barefoot. She was pretty. Her name was like Dana something. And I remember that feeling. That feeling was like really a crazy feeling.
Yeah.
And she did. She offered me $5,000 a week on the X Show. I got paid $5,000 a week doing a late night talk show with like three other people. And I did the math wrong, and I thought I was a millionaire. I was with my buddy Eddie. We were on Franklin, and we were driving. And I go, "I'm going to get $5,000 a week." He goes, "$5,000 a week times 20, times 50, 50, that's $1 million. And I was like, "I'm a millionaire. Let's go to Vegas." Five times 50, I'm a millionaire.
That's amazing. Is there anything in your life now? I mean, you've had so much success. Are you able to tap into that, just like that joy, that like crazy feeling of success like that? Has that come about again in your life?
No. And it sounds callous, but I think, you know, I'm someone who doesn't want to know how deep the ocean is that I'm swimming in. You know, it's you know, I think sometimes if you're aware of the sharks, it's not fun swimming in the ocean. So you just got to pay attention. I remember I was sitting in my hot tub out there and just talking business. I don't mind talking business. And I got a call from my agent, and he said, "Hey, you're the number two earning comic in the world this year." And I was like, "What?" He was like, "Yeah, you made $33 million. And I was like, "I did?" He was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Who's number one?" And he was like, "Kevin Hart." I was like, "Wow." And I couldn't really wrap my head around it. I was like, "It doesn't feel like I made $33 million. Like, I mean, I guess I did, but I didn't get anything new, and I didn't like, and I don't know where the money is. It's just, it's not like tangible. Like the money's somewhere. And I didn't like, I know that no one's ever said no to me about buying stuff, but it doesn't seem real to me. So like, at a certain point, and this is just me speaking, I can't speak for anyone else, but I feel like money just is a number that's negotiated at the end of the day, and I guess my bills are paid. I don't think I'd notice the difference between $100 million and $10 million.
I recently had a woman on who had recently become a billionaire, and I asked her, "What's the difference between having $100 million and $1 billion? And she could not answer the question. She was like, "Yeah, I don't know."
I remember I got offered a $10 million deal one time, and I took it, and it was a touring deal. And they were like, "You're going to give you $10 million for the next year." And I was like, "Wow." I remember being like, cause we were still in the old house, and an 1100 square foot house. And I was like, That felt good. And I remember we went to Vegas, and we took our friends to Vegas, and we paid for everything. And that felt great. Now that's the fucking norm. I pay for everything all the time anyway. I mean, I take my family to Hawaii. I took 15 people to Hawaii, and I'm just like, I guess I'll pay. So yeah, I wish there was like, cause I know people strive for money. And I think it's the fun thing when you want to make money is to know that there's a difference. I was sitting with a friend of mine who's one of the richest guys I know. We had just gotten intravenous stem cells, if that can give you any hint of who my friend was.
Okay.
And I said to him, "What's it like having like hundreds of millions of dollars?" And he kind of thought for a second, and he goes, "I don't know." He goes, "You know, I don't really worry about much." And I was like, "That's it? That's all there is? That's it?"
I got to tell you, for someone who doesn't have that much money, I imagine like, just late at night, just checking my bank account and just staring at it and smiling. But I guess that gets old pretty quick.
I have no idea. I don't even know how to get my, I don't even know what bank we use. My wife takes care of all of that. My wife, if my wife dies, I don't know the PIN numbers for our fucking anything. I don't know where our money is. I don't know how to get a hold of our money. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Bert, we have something special that's going to happen in 1 minute, but I ask you one more question, and I'm going to ask you to hang on, because sure. We have someone that wants to call in, but we'll get to that. So I asked about the first time you got paid. Do you remember the first time you bombed and how you were able to kind of pull yourself out of that?
Yeah, I do. I remember the first time I bombed. The first time I did stand up, I crushed. I did 20 minutes in Tallahassee after four accomplished comedians. I'd never done stand up before, and I destroyed. I mean, I got offered my own morning show by a radio show in Tallahassee. I decided to move to New York. First time I got on stage in New York, I crushed. I mean, I crushed so hard that it was like, we're making the right decision. And then I brought out the secret weapon, and the secret weapon was a guitar. I used to play songs for my fraternity, and I knew that if I brought this guitar up, I go, buddy, it's a matter of time before I, because remember, I was famous. Like a Rolling Stone magazine had discovered me and called me the number one party name in the country. I had this like cachet. I had this like movement behind me. I was like, guys, I'm done doing the open mics as soon as I bring this guitar out. And I brought the guitar on stage and I put it by the fireplace at the Boston Comedy Club. And everyone in the audience stared at the guitar. And I tried doing comedy, and then they were all like, why don't you just play the guitar? And I remember them thinking that. And I bombed for about 8 minutes, and then I put the guitar on, and I'd already bombed so hard that they didn't want to hear anything I had to say. And I bombed so hard. I wish I had this guitar case, because it's a reminder. My cousin and my sister came to see me, and it was so awkward in the cab ride home that they peeled the subway station map off the back of the cab. They used to have them in the cabs, the sticker. They peeled it off just to busy themselves so they didn't have to talk to me. And they put it on my guitar case. And I still have that guitar case. And I still have that subway map. And I remember that uncomfortableness. And I can tell you almost every time I've bombed, I can tell you where I was, what happened, how bad it got. Oh, my God. Yeah, you never forget good bombs. I could tell you other people's bombs. I remember some of the best bombs I've ever watched is my buddies bombing.
Is there anything that you do to pick yourself up after a bomb? Like,
oh, no, you wake up the next morning, you go, maybe I'm not meant to do this. Maybe this is not my calling. I can't believe I tricked everyone for so long. I'm never going to shake this. I had a bomb so bad that I woke up in probably 2010. I had two children. I was a professional comedian. And I woke up the next morning going, how am I going to pay for this house? I'm the worst comedian that's ever lived. I don't deserve to do this. I can't believe I let that happen. Back when I wore a shirt, I had one in Miami where flop sweat started. I mean, it hit me. Flop sweat started and it hit me and it dripped down my face, off the tip of my nose, onto my shirt. And I listened to everyone in the audience go, ooh.
That's amazing.
This is my favorite bomb story ever, is my best friend, Tom Segura. He opened for me one time. Let's see if I can get this right. Oh, I can use my hat. He opened for me one time and he had combed his hair like all the way back. He had combed it all the way back. And as he bombed, his sweat would flop the hair. The hair combs would thing until he had, I swear to God, one combed standing slice of hair standing up. And he was soaking wet. But one hairline was holding on. And the whole audience, we were in Sacramento, the whole audience watched as it wiggled and wiggled. And when it dropped to one side, the room went, oh! And he had no idea it was happening. I think about that one a lot.
That's amazing. We usually have a reader question, but today we have something a little different. A government official asked to call in because they had some questions for you. So I'm going to dial them right now, and then we'll hold up the phone, and then we'll see what happens. Okay, we've got the government official on the line. So I'm going to hold it up to the camera now. And you are on with the mayor of Flavortown.
I just put some rings on.
I figured if this is happening, I got to be in on this. I got to be in on this. All right, wild man. Palomino, Danny Palomino here. That, you don't know his real stage name. But this interview is going on, and I know it's probably playing pretty straight-laced, so I thought I would jump in and come at you with some hard-hitting questions I need you to quickly respond to. All right, Bert, if you could tickle anyone, who would it be?
Tickle? Shaquille O'Neal.
Okay. Second question. What is your stripper name?
Romeo Horse.
Okay. If you had to tattoo a human body part on your neck, what would it be?
A thicker neck.
A thicker neck.
A thicker neck? That bullshit.
Okay. I would tattoo a fist.
A fist? Right there? Okay, I like it. If you had to give up sex or beer for 1 year, which would it be?
Well, I got to tell you, I just got Oculus glasses, and I'll tell you, I had my first foursome the other day with three chicks in an Oculus room. It's insane. So I give up the sex. I mean, Oculus doesn't talk back. They're there when you need them.
Okay, you keep your Oculus. All right. If you had to walk down Rodeo Drive, would it be in a thong or would it be with six clowns in a minivan?
Oh, thong. Without a doubt. I'm much more comfortable in a thong. I hate clowns. You know I hate clowns. I fucking hate clowns. I don't like the upside down world that clowns live in. I'm a thong guy all day.
I didn't mean you to speak out of fantasy. I was just asking. Okay. If you had to start on a professional sports team and play in the championship, what sport and what position would you play?
It would have to be baseball, but it just doesn't sound fun. I think I'd want to be on a football team, and I'd want to be a kicker. I want the same thing that happened in that Ravens-Pittsburgh game. I want the pressure. I want my favorite kicker in the world, Sebastian Janikowski, and that guy loved the pressure. I've had a bottle of tequila with me on the bench, and I get a little bit of a buzz, get rid of those nerves, and bang out 40-yarders.
What song drives you nuts, and you have to turn off the radio when you hear it come on?
Oh, anything Leanne plays. God damn. This is me and my house guy every night. Alexa, shut the fuck up.
Okay. All right. And last question. And it cannot be me. But if you were going to push over a porta potty, who'd be in it?
The ex-president of Venezuela. Manjaro. What's his name? Manjaro? I thought they were protesting my diet drug.
Well, I love you, brother.
I love you too, brother.
The best hangs. I'm glad you get to meet my boy, Dan Bova. Dan is the real deal. I've known him forever. He can tell you some stories. Most are not true. Yes, I did tackle him on the red carpet, and I did tear his sleeve off his jacket at my house for dinner. But other than that.
I love you, guy. I love you, brother.
Thank you, man.
You're the best. All right, Bowen.
Love you, dude.
Palomino, that guy is a handful, man. Good.
All right. Thanks, dude.
See you guys. Be good.
Bye. All right. Well, there
he's
was
the
a...
He is the best. That's like one of my... You know, it's like you meet celebrities. You know, I was a fan of guys for a very long time. Because I was at Travel Channel when he was at Food Network. And I would watch him work a room, and then to become friends with him is kind of mind-blowing. What's mind-blowing is like to get a FaceTime from him on a Sunday afternoon and not be like the typical like, oh shit, I don't want to have to, you can just answer and go, what's up, and just talk to him. You know, that's the, I fucking love that man.
So, well, that leads me to, I mean, you obviously have a lot of fans. Some more prominent than others. But what are the rules of fan behavior that you would love to put out there? Because I know you've got this upcoming Fully Loaded at Sea where you're going to be on a boat with a bunch of your fans. Like, what are the rules?
There's no rules. Here's the deal is I've always been very honest about this, and this isn't a popular take from, I guess, if you call me a celebrity, is I'm a fan, and I geek out, and I misbehave, and I talk, I get nervous, and I say stupid things in front of celebrities. I've done it to Chris Robinson. I've done it to Sammy Hagar. I've done it to a bunch of people where you just, where you get excited, and you aren't, you're out of yourself, and you say you regret things. And that's the part of the fun of meeting a celebrity, is getting up the next morning going, what did I fucking say? And so there's no rules around me, you know, obviously don't hit me and, you know, try not to kill me. But like for the most part, if it's like, just get it. If you get excited, get excited. It makes me excited. And I got no rules. And, you know, there's rules that I'll put out there. Like, I'm probably not going to do a shot with you because I try to stay away from shots these days. Don't ask my daughters to take a picture of us. They're going to fucking not do it. They're going to take a picture of themselves. Don't ask to take a picture with my daughters. They don't want to be a part. They didn't ask to be famous. That's it, really. Those are, you know, if you see one of my daughters or my wife crying while I'm talking to them, give us a little space. You know, that's right, it. Right, like, yeah. One time that happened, my daughter and I were having like a great parenting moment in snow skiing, and we were sitting at the bottom of the lift, and she was crying, and she was having a hard time snowboarding, and I was talking to her about perseverance, and her butt hurt, and she was done with it, and I was saying, you know, this is what it's all about, and then a fan just walked up, my daughter's crying, and he's like, dude, and I was like, can you just give us a second, and then, you know, my daughter's like, I just sometimes want you just to be my dad, and that's it. And you're like, but also, I'm not angry if you don't recognize the social cues, because I haven't recognized social cues at times. You know, that's part of the fun of this whole celebrity thing. And when you meet someone who's a dick, like I heard this Barrett story about Barry Bonds, where someone went up and was like, dude, you're my favorite player. And he goes, you call me dude one more time, I'll knock you the fuck out. Yeah, that's great. You just got a great Barry Bonds story. That's how it fucking works. That's how it fucking works. You got a Barry Bonds story I'll never forget. So yeah, that's the fucking, you know, I was sitting, yeah. Tom and I were having lunch one day, and a fan sat down next to us. He's like, holy fucking shit. He was like, I'm sitting, he goes, I know you guys are friends, but I've never seen it. And Tom goes, hey, can you leave us the fuck alone? And the guy's like, wow. And I go, yeah, man, that's your interaction. I hope you got a good story. That's how it works. You know, that's the rub. So,
well, speaking of stories, I mean, anyone who's seen any of your specials, just listening to you now, you are a storyteller. You're an amazing storyteller. And one of the things that we talk about here all the time is entrepreneurs need to tell their story, the story of their brand, like give something that people can kind of latch onto. So I'm wondering, can you give the Bert Kreischer crash course and how to tell a good story?
Yeah. Oh, easily. A good story starts with a great ending. Always a great ending. Now, obviously when you build a story, sometimes you got to find the ending and that's the fun. But sometimes when you have the ending first, those are the greatest stories to work on. And it also needs a great hook. You need a great moment in that story that really cues your listener. I'll tell you, this is silly, but like, sometimes you walk up on a good story, and you see a good story just happen. It doesn't need to be a huge story. It's just as funny in the moment. Like, I was over the break. This is my favorite story lately, and it's just like a really bite-sized story. There's this black dude, and he was on the aisle, and he was in Ralph's, and he was talking to the kid who worked at Ralph's, a young Latino kid who clearly doesn't give a fuck about his job. And the black guy's like my age, and he's wearing a black tracksuit, and I happen to be wearing the same tracksuit but in gray randomly. And the black guy goes, "Hey man, where's the bread?" And the fucking kid goes, "Aisle one," and he goes, "Aisle one." And he goes, "Why don't you keep the bread by the jams and jellies? You keep the bread by the jams and jellies, then I don't have to walk my ass to aisle one." And he goes, "Use your fucking head, man. Now I got to walk my ass to aisle one." And then he turns around and he looks at me. He goes, "Cool tracksuit." And he just walked away. And I go, that's a great story. In my opinion, I take that on stage. And then I go, but it needs an ending. So then I go, walked up to the Mexican kid and I go, "Hey man, where's the bread?" But you need an ending, you know? That's the fun of a story is like, I haven't taken that on stage yet, but I will take that on stage and figure it out, because it's sometimes it's like the littlest thing.
When things like this are happening, do you write them down, or it's just like in your head and it's locked in?
I write some stuff down. I'll write some stuff down. I put it in my notes just to remind me. But for the most part, I think it's jarred from memory of like telling good stories or like sitting around a room and someone's like, "Yo, did you like?" It's like I'm not a joke writer, and I love jokes. I love jokes, but it's not my passion. I'm not a mathematician guy. I'm a sit around the table guy. I'm a sit at the fire guy. I'm a sit on a porch next to an old man and listen to him tell a story.
Do you get nervous anymore? You've been at this for quite a long time, but like, you know, you're backstage at Kimmel or whatever show or one of your performances. Like what's your mindset at that point?
No, I don't get nervous per se. I used to get really nervous. Like when I did Last Comic Standing 2, my butt cheeks were sweating. Like sweat was running down my legs. I was so nervous. And I sat back there at that moment and I drank maybe 100 Red Bulls. And I was like, I wanted to get up. I wanted to get my energy up. I wanted to kill. And I needed that money. And then I sat in this stairwell at Last Comic Standing and I was like, I'm not enjoying this. Like, this isn't fun. And if this is the job, I don't want to do this. And then I didn't get Last Comic Standing too, and I was devastated. But, you know, now it's like I'm the most comfortable I am on stage. I'm the most comfortable I am in an arena. If you put me on any stage, everything, I don't think about on my flight the next day. For that moment, I'm very present, which I'm not often in life. But and I don't get I get nervous. Like I had to do the CMAs, and I got nervous that I would mess up and say like VMA, or that I would mess up and say something off where you don't know you do it. But for the most part, you kind of go into cruise control and you do what you do best. And the same thing happened over at when we did the New Year's Eve for CBS. I went into cruise control and I just did stand up. I just kind of remembered what I knew I needed to say and kind of said it. So yeah, maybe I'd be better if I got more nervous. I don't know.
No. But do you think that's a matter of just reps, or is it like that mindset shift that you just said, I don't want to be a nervous wreck anymore, so I'm just not going to be?
I think it's reps. I think it's getting up there enough and then being, I remember when I first started, I remember being like, I wonder, I should stand on the stage more so I get more comfortable on the stage. And I was like, I wonder if I can, if they'll let me spend the night on the stage one night and just sleep on the stage. It was like a crazy workaround. But I think it's just the more you get up on stage, the more comfortable you are on stage. I'll get nervous. Oddly enough, I'll get a little nervous sometimes if I'm performing in LA. I used to more, not now as much, but at the Comedy Store, because the lineups were so crazy. Like just a few years ago in like 2019, the lineups were like, I mean, Norm MacDonald, David Spade, Joe Rogan, Bill Burr, Sebastian Maniscalco, Tom Segura, I mean, Whitney Cummings, Tim Dillon, like Mark Norman couldn't get on stage. The guys that are the biggest comics in the world right now would have a hard time getting on those stages.
Wow.
And that's how crazy it was. And I would get nervous because yeah. I'd be like, oh my God. But yeah, not as much anymore.
You've mentioned Tom a bunch of times, and I wanted to ask you about the vodka, Porosos Vodka. What went into that decision to start a company together, and more importantly, what were the taste test sessions like?
Well, you know, it's so funny. I was sober during the taste testing, and so I was just tasting it. I was literally putting it in my mouth, swirling it around, and spitting it out when we were testing it. And we had like 17 different flavor profiles. Me and him settled on the same two and then decided drinking those two on the podcast, which one we were going to pick. What happened is I was getting approached by a bunch of either distillers to white label a brand personally, they were coming to me, or I had the people that started Fitvine had their non-compete had run out, and they wanted to start a wine with me because I really liked their wine, and then I just decided I called Tom. I said, you know, I brought Tom into one of the deals. I said, you know, I'd be really upset if Tom started a booze without me, so I'm going to reach out to my buddy Tom and see if he's interested first, and then if not, I'll just move forward. And he said he is interested, but he didn't want to white label it. He wanted to build the company from the ground up. He's like, it's going to cost more money, but I think the payoff's going to be bigger. And he goes, I think it would be fun to be liquor barons. And I was like, okay. And so it was like a year and a half process. We designed the bottle. We helped in the design of the logo. We designed the cap. We designed how you open the bottle. I mean, everything to the flavor profiles to the distilling process. We picked a proprietary distilling process that left it cleaner, because for me, it's more about, I mean, all of the branding, it's recovery. It pairs well with our 5K, because it's my brand has always been recovery. I don't think people see it that way, but trust me. And I would say this, if I stop recovering, if I stop working out, if I stop drinking water at the end of the night, if I stop recovering, you'll notice. If I stop partying, you're never going to notice. Mm-hmm. If I stop drinking, you won't know. What is it? Right. Like, I was always blown away when people go, are you an alcoholic? I go, you don't sit at my house and watch me drink. That's right. What are you, based off of a story you heard on the podcast or that I got hammered on Rogan? You think that's my problem? God.
That's fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate all this time you're giving me so we could get into the speed round if you're ready for that. I know you just had one with Guy. But the first question we always ask everyone is, what is a habit that you are happy to have and one that you wish you could ditch?
Oh, I think it would be the same habit. Mine always go internal. I'm very punitive. So my punitiveness drives me to do things like go to the gym or work hard in the gym, or to say that I'm not that great of a comic and work harder and do more dates. And when I prepare for a special, I go for an entire month. I live on the road and I do maybe about 80 shows that month. And that's all punitive stuff. I really love that habit because it drives me, but I feel like at a certain point, I wish I could get rid of it because it's not a fun partner to have, where you're just beating yourself up and you're saying to yourself, you're not worth the success. You're not worth the being in the room. You're not like there's imposter syndrome that goes along with it. My dad used to say he wasn't a good trial attorney. So he would over prepare for trials. And I remember hearing that as a kid going like, so that's the thing. Like, if you're going to play baseball, you got to work harder than everyone. You got to be in the batting. You're not going to have better talent than anyone, but you can work harder than everyone. And there's a comic, I wish I could say his name. He's so talented. He's so naturally talented, but he is absolutely not even remotely close to where I'm at in this career. And it's simply because I remember doing a podcast with him and he was telling me he was getting ready for his Netflix special. And he's like, I go, wow, when you shoot it. And he's like, in 3 weeks, I'm going to go out on the road, I think these next 2 weeks. I went, what? He was like, yeah, I'm going to get the, you know, kind of put the material together. I've been doing the material in clubs for a while, but like I'm gonna shape the hour in the next couple of weeks. And I went, wow. In my head, I wanted to go, it takes me 18 months to get ready for a special, and that's just working on the materials 18 months. Easy. I mean, with this next one is gonna be 28 months, and then I go, and then I leave over a month out. I used to leave and fly to different cities every single night, even when I had kids. Now I get on a tour bus and I travel around the country doing every fucking show I can find. And I go, this guy just does 2 weekends? And I was like, he must wake up with like the best inner dialogue. Like, you're crushing it, big guy. No introspection, no punitiveness, no,
right.
I bet he thinks his special was amazing.
That's great. So I know you've got to go. So I have one last question, and this also got sent in by someone very special. Chris DiStefano had a question for you. Very highbrow question coming your way. If you could put your nipples anywhere else on your body, where would you put them and why?
Right under my eyes, like Post Malone. so that I could always say, hey, hey, my eyes are up here. My eyes are up here. I see you looking at my nipples up my eyes.
That's beautiful. Well, I think that's, I think we found our ending. What do you think?
I think so. Chris DiStefano is the best. I love that guy.
Yeah. Good guy. Thanks for the question, Chris. And Bert, thank you for the time and the laughs. This has been awesome.
Hey, thank you. This has been a blast.